everybody that you run into. How in the world do you think anybody's supposed to respect you? It's a brand new day. Respect yourself. Well, this is Mental Health Radio, Take It From Us, and that's our theme music from Joe Cocker called Respect Yourself. I guess I'd have to say that's not something that the National Party is doing at the moment, respecting themselves, respecting the party and respecting politicians within the party. And now we're having to get to grips with what sectioned means in terms of politician Jamie Lee Ross. And we will just have a look at that a little later in the program. But I'm host Sheldon Brown with technician Declan Curran, and Mental Health Radio Take It From Us is brought to you and funded by Framework Trust. Now, today we have a musician on the line in Kapiti, Andrew Crawshaw, AJ for short, and he has written and produced a special track for Mental Health Awareness Week, which we played last week to coincide with the big Mental Health Week in New Zealand. And that song, as I understand it, says something about being at the edge of an emotional abyss. Well, let's, before we bring Andrew in, we're going to play this track, which I think is called Declan Living.
Life's for the Living.
Life's for the Living, that's the one.
Been on the precipice, hard on the ledge. Don't want to fall off, be left for dead. All my time's been thinking of my failure. Staring down over the railings. Nobody knows it better than one who's seen the abyss. Nobody said it better to me than like this. Step I took, couldn't find my way. Been down at times, we're always trying to stand. Reaching into the darkness with both hands. Nobody knows it better than one who's seen the abyss. Nobody said it. You can't see.
Take It From Us on 104.6 Planet FM.
And that's Life's for the Living by Andrew Crawshaw, and we're hoping that Andrew is on the line from Kapiti. Andrew, are you there?
Yeah, hi there. Thanks for having us on your show.
Oh, well, it's a great pleasure, and thank you very much for writing and producing Life's Life's for Living, for Mental Health Awareness Week. What's the response been to that track, Andrew?
Actually, it's been really good from those who've heard it. So we've had quite a fair chunk of radio play, and we've had quite a lot of people sharing it upon seeing it on social media, and it's had thousands of views on the little music video that we put together to go with it. So, it's been really well received, and lots of positive messages about people saying, "Hey, look, that really touched me, and that was really helpful," and you know, that kind of thing.
So where can people access that? Is it on YouTube somewhere, is it?
Yeah, you can look up AJ Crawshaw, Life for the Living on YouTube. We're on Spotify. It's on Spotify now this week. So you can look us up there, AJ Crawshaw, the AJ Crawshaw Band again, and Life for the Living, or you can visit our Facebook page, and it's all on there as well. We've pinned it to the top, so... You can check out the video that we put together for it there.
You've got your own band, the AJ Crawshaw Band, have you?
Yeah, that's right. And they actually had quite a big contribution to the music on the track. So, we workshopped the song together and recorded it, and I acted as engineer and producer, but they were very creatively involved and how to arrange the different parts and things. So,
good
musicians.
That's got a certain ring to it, the AJ Crawshaw Band.
Ah, oh, great. Awesome, yeah, and I like it because it gives credit to those musicians as well. It's not just all me, right? Yeah.
Yeah, so what activities are the band involved in? You rocking the pubs in Kapiti, are you?
Yeah. We've gigged quite a bit recently, which is great. We've been playing mostly just locally down in Kapiti in the Wellington region. And down in the Kapiti Coast, I run an event called The Local Scene, and they've been having really big responses. People coming out locally to watch local original acts. So we chuck together, I don't know, 7 to 8 acts on a night from 5 till midnight. And, we've been having about 300 people pop along to those, which is cool.
Oh, yeah. The girls are going crazy, are they?
No, well, I don't know about that, but people are certainly enjoying it, which is good. And it's nice to see people supporting local original music, so that's been it's been awesome.
Is this the first song that you've sort of written and produced with a mental health theme?
So I guess there's been, because I've suffered for a long time from quite bad depression, there's been a variety of songs that have expressed it in a variety of different ways, and I guess this will probably be the first song where I felt I've kind of come to grips with it and have managed to make some decent progress in my own life on it, and then having written the song at the end of that process. I would say it's kind of the more useful things that I've found have helped. I tried to tag into the chorus and make available for other people to know. So it's a real fight, man, trying to deal with depression and trying to deal with mental health and, when you're in the throes of it, it can be a really dark space. So,
can I ask you though about that whole business of fighting depression rather than experiencing it? Well, I think if we fight our depression, then we are having to put a huge amount of energy into the battle, and maybe we just don't have that energy. But is that something you've thought about?
Yeah, look, it's I certainly got to a space where I felt that nothing would improve and I couldn't fight any longer. And then it actually just needed some mental health professionals to take it from there. But I guess as things slowly improved, once I got on some medication, then I got some fight back in me. But it certainly is not an even thing. It's not like you're constantly battling and you're constantly making progress. It's much more like you go for a run for a bit, then trip over and injure yourself badly, and then a bleeding, and then you have to somehow recover and then get back up and keep going again. And so I don't think it's easy. It's definitely, it was the hardest through one of the hardest fights of my life, to be honest. I'd rather be physically ill than mentally ill.
What triggered this depression, do you think?
So I've had it since I was a teenager, so it's a long-running thing, and it would come in bouts and different levels of severity. So I would say for me there's definitely a genetic component to it, and I've certainly got mental health issues in my family and all of that kind of stuff. So I think there's definitely that genetic part, and then circumstances building on top of that, and then just a general feeling of being trapped by it, which, you know, creates a bit of a cycle. Yeah.
So how long have those sort of symptoms and experiences gone on?
Oh, over a decade. Yeah, long time.
It hit you when you, what you said, as a teenager? Were you at school?
Yep. So I was at school, and being a creative type, I also coming with that territory is a sense of being outcast often. So if you're reasonably intelligent and you're reasonably creative and you're a little bit different, then you can tend to get ostracized. And it definitely was my experience of school. That kind of fed into it as well, you know. So already having that propensity for it, and then, you know, feeling a lot of rejection during my teenage years and feeling a lot of being left out, you know.
You were left out because you were seen to be creative and maybe a little bit different?
Yeah, a little bit different, yeah.
Right.
That's just kids, isn't it? It doesn't seem to improve generation to generation, that kind of thing.
Well, yeah, I guess we call it discrimination in mental health, don't we? Did you feel discriminated against?
Yep, for sure.
Right.
Yep. And definitely the schooling system wasn't a good fit for me, right. which I think a lot of people would be able to identify with. In some ways it was. I mean, like, I was apt at it. I was good at school, but I just... the whole structure of it and the whole nature of it was really not helpful. Yeah.
So you reckon you would have been better if you'd been in the first 15 and, doing all those things that are, whatever you call it, normal or something.
Yeah, that's right. And, I mean, I was really artistic. So I was painting and I was writing songs and playing piano during my lunch hours and, you know, doing a variety. That was really where my passions lay, and also even my approach to schoolwork. Like, I would always take a sideways route.
Yeah.
And so at that point in the education system, that was heavily discouraged. Yeah.
So
all the way through primary school.
In listening to your track, Life's for Living, I think I heard that you'd been on the precipice. That sort of suggests that things were getting pretty serious.
Yeah, so a couple of years ago, when I was a teenager, I tried once to end it all. And then a couple of years ago, I got into a really bad place again. So probably more severe. And so I had it planned. And I, as you want to do when you're in a really dark space, I blew up at my wife one night and it kind of all came out. Which is actually for the best, because she got my dad on the phone and he got me booked into a mental health professional straight away. And so that was actually how, I guess, the start of the recovery came about.
Well, I was just going to ask, was that the first time that you had been to see a mental health professional 2 years
ago?
Well,
I guess this might be something that people can learn from. I knew I was depressed, I knew it was bad, and so I went along to a GP to try and get the free counselling sessions, which I did, but I didn't want to, I downplayed it. So I when they did the test, I was like, oh no, I'm not that bad, I'm not as bad as other people. So I kind of half fudged the answers and didn't really confess to the full extent of how suicidal I was, and it meant that I didn't actually receive good treatment. So the counselling wasn't helpful, it wasn't useful, I was too far gone. In fact, when I got to see a psychologist the second time around that my dad paid for, the psychologist was like, there's nothing I can do for you, you need to be on drugs and then we'll talk. So they were like, you're too far gone, sorry, I can't help. And so they sent me to a psychiatrist, he got me on meds, and then once the meds had kicked into a certain point, then they were able to actually start doing some decent therapy.
But how did you feel when the psychologist said to you, look, there's nothing I can do for you, you're too far gone? I mean, that's hardly very supportive, is it?
Well, it was almost validating.
Really?
In a weird kind of way. It was almost like, okay, I've got to take this way more seriously than I have been now. And I've got to just fess up to the point I'm in. So, I mean, the psychologist did it in the nicest of ways. So just basically saying, I don't think talk therapy is going to help until you get medication sorted. Yeah, and so... So in a weird way, it was validating, but in another way, it was a bit of a shock. Yeah.
It sounds as though you were in a bit of a state of denial that you were as bad as you were, and you didn't really want to let on to professionals.
Totally, yeah.
And what if you had the time around again, how would you play it?
I would be way more honest. Yeah.
Right.
You know, I would be more honest with myself, I think. I've always just tried to tough it out in that typical Kiwi bloke kind of way, and it really didn't work for me, eh? Yeah.
So
I really
you ended up
open and honest. Yeah.
You ended up on this precipice. You were contemplating jumping off the precipice?
Yeah.
And what?
Yeah, totally.
And so was that discussion with your wife that prevented you from... encourage you not to do that?
It stopped me in the interim. She persuaded me that it might be a good idea to just at least try one more thing. Yeah? So that was...
And that one more thing...
Go and see a psychiatrist, go and talk to somebody who knows more, go talk to a psychologist first. She was like, you know, the counselling didn't work, that's fine, I get it, but let's try something a bit deeper. Let's try something a bit heavier. We'll throw whatever money we need to at it, you know, that kind of thing. So that was,
right.
You know.
So, it sounds as though medication may have helped turn the corner, but were there other strategies that were suggested for you?
I think what helped was that the medication basically kept me alive, right? Like it lifted me up enough that I was numb, so that, you know, it got me to a point where I was able to actually start dealing with stuff. So that was really good. And then the other stuff that helped in the corner, I mean, they did this really cool thing with me called EMDR, and that was amazing, just unlocking stuff and, you know, repress stuff or things I hadn't been able to deal with emotionally, I'd been unable to, and that was really super useful. Once I was able to get into the therapy, talk therapy helped a bit, lifestyle changes helped a bit, learning how to take care of myself a bit better and acknowledge, instead of just keep on pushing and fighting, acknowledge when I was weak and acknowledge when I needed to take time out and actually give myself a break.
I think Declan, the technician here, wanted to come in with a question.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say, I think for me, having had two near-suicide attempts myself, for me the big thing was if I reach out to family, the typical response was, get you together, get on with it, you've got this, you've got that, and, you know, what's the problem? And I think that fear of rejection, we try to deal with it on our own, but the problem with that is this whole, be a man, toughen up thing, it's like we need to somehow, and I think we're starting to do it, basically knock that in the guts, because that's what's causing a lot of the issues that we're currently seeing.
Yeah, I'd agree with you, eh? I actually think there's, there's a toxic way that we can bottle stuff up by, you know, thinking we should be the strong one all the time, right?
Mm-hmm.
And and that being encouraged by basically everything around us, you know, like, you know, harden up, you need to toughen up, you need to stand strong, all that kind of stuff. And then we're not strong all the time, eh?
I was just going to say, when you realize your family are on side and you get that treatment, I think that makes a big difference, doesn't it? It's like a big breakthrough.
Yeah, and it really was. And it was, it was really encouraging to see from my family's perspective that they were willing to, you know, like come to the party with me.
Yeah.
I think you're right, that really did help. Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Was bullying a factor at school or since you've left school?
Yep, totally. I got bullied throughout my primary school years and my teenage years,
I can relate to that.
And the only thing that brought me respite, funnily enough, was when I got big and strong and good at rugby.
Ah, really?
I just turned out I was naturally gifted at rugby. I didn't enjoy it. But I mean, the bullying ceased for a couple of years, which was just ridiculous, isn't it? Nothing had changed about me fundamentally. Yeah.
That you gained a bit of status, I suppose, by being good at rugby and part of a team.
And then when I quit rugby, it all kind of went back to normal, you know? So it's just,
Did you find that sort of bullying, for me, I found the third and the fourth form years were the toughest for me, and I used to, my little Bambi refuge island was the library. Having enjoyed books on that, and it was like, you can see me through the glass, but you can't get me, sort of, you know. I found though when I got into the sixth form that I think they'd started to mature a bit more and get their act together and focus more on their studies. Is that what you experienced as well?
So for me, it's hard thinking about it, but I experienced bullying in various forms throughout. I mean, I remember, year 10, all my friends ditching me and running away from me, and I remember just throwing myself, similar to you, the library, you said, I threw myself into the music room.
Yep.
Probably how I got really good at music, right?
Because the sports system
is... Every lunch hour I was practicing or writing songs or doing something, you know?
And I found the teachers weren't supportive either.
Who wasn't supported?
I found the teachers used to say to me, start mixing in, start making friends, you know, stop telling tales and all this sort of thing.
Yeah.
When you went to see them, the problem was shifted back on me. You're not making an effort as against these people attacking me.
I think it's really... I have compassion for teachers because I think they have a lot to deal with nowadays. But, yeah, I mean, there's not... And I actually almost feel there's not a lot they can do within reason. I mean, it would be great if they were able to go, hey, look, you're okay and there's nothing wrong with you, and sit down and, you know, and explain to you just how it all is. But I think a lot of the time they're just running to catch their tails.
Mm-hmm.
So, I do feel for them in the role that they have, but... Yep, it would be great if there was some more, I guess, training around how to help assist deal with bullying, for sure.
Well, let's stay on the line, please, Andrew, and we'll play another music track. Well, unfortunately, we haven't got another one from the AJ Crawshaw Band, but maybe you can email some other tracks up to us. But Declan's got something here.
Yeah, I've got, just going to put you on hold, but you should be able to hear us in the background. The song I've got is from an Australian singer by the name of Troy Sivan, and it's called Talk Me Down, and it talks about basically a couple of friends and how they've been friends since they were basically primary school, and how they develop into a relationship that one person's having a lot of problem dealing with, and the other person says, look, I need to step back from this. And it has the suicide topic in there as well. I think it's appropriate for today's show. So you're listening to Take It From Us Mental Health Radio. We're broadcasting to you every week on Planet FM 104.6. And if I can get some sound out of this, we'll be right.
I want to sleep next to you, but that's all I want to do right now. And I want to come home to you, but home is just a room full of my safest sounds. 'Cause you know that I can't trust myself with my 3 a.m. shadow. I'd rather fuel a fantasy and deal with this alone. I wanna sleep next to you, but that's all I wanna do right now. So come over now and talk me down.
wounds you need to heal. I wanna sleep next to you, but that's all I wanna do right now. So come over now and talk me down.
Take it from us on 104.6 Planet FM.
And I'm host Sheldon Brown on Take It From Us with Declan Curran, who's doing a wonderful job as a technician. And he rescued me this morning because I lost our guest's mobile phone number somewhere, and Declan was able to save the day, and our guest, AJ, was able to text me with that number. So that's the sort of help that is really valuable. But our interview with AJ today was inspired by Life's for Living, a track that the AJ Crawshaw Band wrote and produced for Mental Health Awareness Week, and I think we were offered the opportunity on Take It From Us to play that, and we did it last week. So, Andrew, you're still there?
Yeah. Thanks for having us again. I really appreciate it.
Yeah.
You could hear that music, I hope, while we were...
Yeah, it was a very touching song, wasn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's there's a story behind it, which I won't go into, but it's, yeah. Anyway.
So, You talk in Life for Living, you urge people to get help, and it sounds as though that's something that you've done. Are there other strategies outside of medication that you're adopting?
So I'm actually medication free now, which is great because of some of the other stuff and work which I've done. So the kinds of things that have really helped for me, and I think it's really important to stress this is quite individual specific. So what works for me just isn't necessarily going to work for the next person. So the talk therapy was really helpful, the EMDR, which I mentioned earlier,
I just want to clarify this EMDR. Does that stand for something, does it?
Let's see, eye movement directorial, I'm not going to be able to remember the exact abbreviation,
right.
But what they do is they try and tap into the REM part of your brain, like what happens when you do your REM sleep kind of cycles, through tapping or through a light source, and that helps you untap the unconscious emotion you weren't able to deal with as a kid or as a teenager. In my case, as we talked earlier, some of that was due to do with bullying and other rejection and other issues. And yeah, so that was really helpful. It just unlocking some stuff, some rather painful memories, but and some abuse stuff there as well, and helping deal with that. So that's on the, I guess, the professional end of things that I found that particular treatment really useful.
Right.
But in terms of other behaviours that I do now, like I exercise 5 days a week, which is really good. I find it's a massive stress relief. And I do, I try and eat healthy, and I try and give myself downtime, which I never used to do, and accept when I need to take time, which I actually find really hard with my personality. I'm always go, 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 but actually taking time out,
What about
leaning back, I suppose,
What about your music?
Oh, hey, that's massive.
Right.
Yes. Yeah, the music, creative process is amazing for helping deal with stuff, right? Whenever there's a raw nerve, it helps to be able to put it into a song, or helps to be able to put it into, like, just pure emotion is pure music and lyric. And, yeah, the songwriting I find incredibly helpful, yeah.
And what about playing music or even listening to music?
Yeah, so I guess the listening to music thing is really cool. Like, it can, again, similar kind of thing, help untap emotion. And playing music, there's a space you can get into once you get relatively proficient. They call it the zone. So it's like where you're just there. There's nothing else but blank mental space, and things are just flowing. And that's really incredible, that kind of space where you're just completely and utterly absorbed in what you're doing to the exclusion of all else. And that's a massive mental break.
Right.
If you're having to deal with anything in your life, just being that absorbed and being able to just, everything else just disappears, that's pretty incredible.
So what instruments do you play, AJ?
Oh, right. So I play guitar. I sing, obviously. Keyboards, piano, a bass. I can do a bit of drums. I can play ukulele, a bit of mandolin.
Wonderful. So your style of music, do you have a descriptive for what style of music the AJ Crawshaw Band plays?
Yeah, so we would play, I just call it acoustic rock because it seems to cache a whole lot of different stuff. But I guess you could say it's a little bit alternative rock mixed with a variety of other styles of rock, alternative pop, someone's called it, alternative folk, someone else has called it, different reviewers of the music. So, I think we neatly fit into maybe that kind of style of music, So there's definitely a lot of... because we've got the drums and the band and the bass going and all that kind of stuff, so that rock thing fits. And then we've got some catchy hooks, so the pop thing kind of fits. And then using layered or interesting instruments or alternative different ways of approaching the soundscape, the folk kind of label fits sometimes. So
If you hadn't had your music, what do you think the outcome might have been?
Ooh. That's something I haven't actually... I've always just taken music for granted.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'd have to have found a different way to process everything, wouldn't I? Maybe I would have tried to do something with art or something. I don't know.
Sounds as though you might be sort of denying the incredible value of your music.
Yeah, maybe a little way. Yeah, I mean, it's a really good thought. Yeah, you're right. I think maybe the value of having it there has always been something I can lean into, right?
It sounds as I'm pretty confident that you have also helped mates or friends who have sort of, I think, got to the edge of an emotional abyss, which is, I think, some wording in this track that we're talking about, Life for Living. How do you go about, extending your empathy to friends?
Yeah, so, I mean, the song itself that we've been listening to, that Life for Living, that actually came about because a friend of mine, one of my best friends, actually, he decided he would end it, and I got that phone call. I think it was like a you know, cry for help. And when you get that call, drop everything, which is what I did. I just stopped whatever I was doing and bowled round. And because it's that, you have this narrow moment, I think, where people drop that, where you have a chance to intervene. And so I was able to get round to his house and talk him down and help him see some things and encourage him that, you know, look, he does have value. He was feeling like he had no value in his life at that point, and it wouldn't matter if he ended it or not, you know. And so so that was helpful. I told his wife. I mean, one of the big things I think that aids in you know, this disease worsening in people's lives is secrecy. Mm. And so telling the family, telling other people, I think actually can really help, because then they can hear the honest perspectives of their family and friends and find out, you know, that actually they do matter and that there are people who love them and do want to support them to get better. So I told on them,
which
I didn't appreciate at the moment.
But, okay, can I just ask there, though, yeah. did you ask him whether it was okay to tell on him?
Yes, I told him that I was going to, and
right.
He was okay. Yeah, he agreed to that reluctantly, but yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's good to have some permission there, but yeah, I did youth work for a while, and one of the things that, and I had some teenagers who got suicidal on me, and one of the things I used to do was just call the CAT team. And I think there's some real value in having some of that professional intervention, because at that point, maybe they haven't had anything.
Mm.
And then all of a sudden, there's a big resource available to them to get them some help. And often, and I think this can be a tragedy, is that there's a lot of medical help available at the bottom of the cliff.
Right.
And not a lot at the top. And so seizing that moment, I think, is quite helpful.
So can I just ask you, were you able to ring the crisis team on behalf of somebody that was in a crisis, or did you have to encourage that person in a crisis to ring on their own behalf?
I had to call on behalf more often than not. Yeah.
And they were prepared to act because you're a third party, aren't you?
Yes, yeah, and they were prepared to act, that's right. Yeah.
Right, because when I was a voluntary counsellor, telephone counsellor on a lifeline, one of the things was we couldn't act unless we were talking to the person who was experiencing, you know, the crisis.
Oh, that's interesting. That's not been my experience.
Okay.
I guess maybe because I was a little bit more lay than a counsellor.
Right.
They maybe had different rules or, yeah.
You were able to pull...
Surrounding a family friend or, you know, that kind of thing.
You were able to pull rank a bit.
Yeah, and it worked.
Right.
The few times that I tried it, and I found that was immensely helpful.
Yeah.
In the case of my friend, I didn't call the CAT team. I did tell his wife and family, though.
Yeah.
And that really helped him in that moment, and he said, didn't go back there again, which is great. And then I actually wrote him that song.
Life's for the Living is a song to what? Acknowledge your friend.
Yeah, yep. And to acknowledge his struggle and to encourage him, I guess, that, look, it does get better, even if you can't see it in the moment.
Mm.
And from someone who's been there. So, like, knowing what it's like staring into the abyss of there is no hope, there is nothing I can do, nothing will ever get better, like having those feelings and those perspectives and then actually having come through it and then going, well, actually, now I'm really glad I didn't end it.
So, I mean, the fact that you'd had these experiences, you'd been there, how important was that in helping your mate?
I think really important. It gives you an authority to talk, right?
Yeah. And a credibility as well.
That's right. Like, when I say, and I mean it, you know, like, I know what it's like to stare into that.
Yeah.
I know what it's like to feel nothingness is in front of you and it's just your future is completely dark, and you know, and you feel dark, and you feel like there's no hope, you know.
Mm.
And then to come out the other side and honestly be able to say life is for the living, mm. you know, that I think that's there's a power in that. Maybe there's a way for me then. If this guy who felt this bad, who understands what that feels like, maybe there's some kind of a way that I can then get that kind of help. I can then get some kind of, yeah, and everyone's journey is different to getting that help, but maybe there is a way forward. Maybe just if I hold on for long enough, or if I get some help, if I reach out, or if I just learn some better skills or whatever it is, maybe I can also learn to stand, or stand stronger than I did in the past, you know? So,
Have you stood strong together in this journey?
Yes, absolutely. So we check in with each other, me and this particular friend, quite often now. Yeah. And so that's, that's actually something we haven't really talked about, and I do think that togetherness, that sense of community, is really important.
I think the brilliant thing of that too is that you're both able to support each other, and you probably get support from him as well that you don't perhaps realise. You know, you're both being able to be in situations where it comes from someone who understands.
Yeah. I mean, he's a very close... I have a couple of friends in my life who are very close now, and he would be one of them, and we can talk openly, honestly, about anything. Yeah. And that's such a valuable friendship.
Mm.
He does. He helps me as much as I help him, for sure. So, undoubtedly. And that would be the tragedy of losing him, of course.
Yeah.
You know? If he had given in, I would be... There would be this debt in my life that wouldn't be able to be filled by anything, you know?
So that
friendship is so valuable.
Well, I was just going to ask you, you know, how critical is it to have that connection?
Extremely critical. And I don't even necessarily think it needs to be filled by lots of people. It just needs to be filled by a couple of people in your life that you're really connected to. And I think that makes a real big difference, eh? You guys haven't been through similar mental health exposures and difficulties, you know. I think you would attest to that too. Just finding people who you can trust and who you can be fully open with is really helpful.
I think it's absolutely critical, and you can monitor each other. Probably Declan and I do a bit of monitoring of each other on the radio.
That's lovely to hear. That's great.
I think the big thing too is that you get that one or two good friends, and I've got a friend in Melbourne who's recently lost his mum, who I've come back from visiting, and she had cancer and unfortunately passed away, and he's finally going through difficulties processing that, and it's like, you know, I'm here to help you as much as I can. And one of the things I've said that I've shared with Sheldon and listeners is that, you know, he said to me, I don't feel normal anymore, with a lot of medical things that have been happening with him as well, and feeling like he hadn't stepped up to the plate with his mum. And I said, you know, what is normal anyway? I said, what's normal for you, I said, may not be normal for someone else. And I said, when you have something like any mental health event or a big thing in your life, you know, and it changes you, changes your circumstances, I said to him, all it is, I said, it's finding and redefining you a new normal. And I said, and when you find that, happy place where you're back as close as you were before it all happened, that's your new normal. And it's just getting comfortable with that. And I think if you've got really close friends that you can just open up, they'll listen to you and they won't criticise you. And I think that's the biggest thing, is a lot of people are full of criticism. They won't actually stop and listen to what you've got to say.
And when you find someone who will just listen, it's a powerful way.
And sometimes, sometimes it's a case of, I don't need you to find answers for me. I just need you to be there and listen and just let me get it out. Because I think half of it is getting it out there. And when you get it out there, it's just like dropping a load of bricks off your back.
Yeah.
Good analogy.
And I think that understanding too, right? Like that, feeling like someone's understood.
And when you've got
it's not some horrible mystery or you're some horrible person, it's part of life.
And when you've got someone that's been right to the depths of basically swimming around in pig, you know, to get yourself through that, you know, no matter what we face in life, we always seem to come out the other end. But to have someone that's not been through necessarily exactly the same experience, but who has experienced that mental distress in their life, to be able to share that with someone and know you're not going to be judged, that's a huge asset to have in your life. You know, particularly what you're dealing with. And I've got to take my hat off to you that when you're in that position where you're suicidal, I found for me that the hardest thing was I used to just say, just sit in this chair and don't go anywhere, because I knew if I got out of that chair, it would be... And that was hard, really hard.
Okay, we better take our third music break. Andrew, hang about there on the phone in Capity, and we'll be back to you.
Look, I'm playing a totally different song than I was going to play. I was going to do Nights in White Satin. But based on the subject of what we're talking about today, I've been playing you a song that I've had sitting here for a little while. It's a simple reminder about how precious life is and how we should sink in every moment and how we should look up to what we have. The guy that wrote the lyrics is a guy by the name of John Ondrasik, if I've got it right. He wrote the lyrics about his life, and he was born in 1965. He was about 39 when the song was released. You're listening to 104.6 Planet FM. We broadcast Mental Health Radio, Take It From Us, every Tuesday right here from 12:30 to 1:30.
You're with Take It From Us on 104.6 Planet FM.
And we're talking to Andrew Crawshaw from the AJ Crawshaw Band down there in Kapiti, north of Wellington. Still with us, Andrew?
Yeah, still with you.
Yeah, so we'll just wrap it up. I wanted to ask you, how confident are you about your recovery?
That's a really good question, man. You've had some really great questions today.
I'm an ex-journalist.
I think at the moment I'm good, and I think that's probably the best I can hope for.
Yeah.
I acknowledge that I could get quite bad again, given, you know, and I think life can be like that. It can be quite fragile. And I guess that was one of the biggest shocks for me coming out of all of that, was just how fragile I was, and just how fragile your thinking is, and just how fragile your mind can be. And at the moment I'm good, and I've built some things into my life to hopefully make sure that I stay strong. But if all my circumstances change again, you know, I could be back there. So I guess I just live right now, and I'm grateful that, that things are good. Yeah.
Well, that's a bit of a what if, isn't it, Andrew, that, you know, if we sort of wonder about, well, what if this happened, or what if that happened, or what if my relationship broke up? But I think maybe if we can live in the present and enjoy what we've got.
Yeah, adding on to that, I was just going to say I had some good advice from a friend of mine who's no longer with us now, but he said to me, you know, just live one day at a time, and I do. And I had somebody who was a friend of mine who I basically got rid of, because one of the things he said one day was, have you got a five-year plan? And I said, no, I don't. And he said, well, if you've got haven't got a five-year plan, then you've got no future. You may as well go and top yourself. And I said, what?
Oh, my gosh.
That's what he said to me. And I says to him, I don't need to have a five-year plan. I said, I just need to get myself through each day one by one. And as a result of that, you know, you rub them on the belly while you stab them in the back. I just thought, I don't need someone like that in my life. So I more or less told him where to go, short and sharp. But I just wanted to throw in there as well, some saying that I try and live by, and it helps me, is 90% of what we worry about doesn't happen. Of the 10% left, 5% is going to happen anyway, and the other 5% we can change. And I find that if something happens, some event, and I drop something and it breaks or whatever, I go, oh, well, I never liked you anyway, sort of thing. And then, you know, I look on the bright side, and I tend to ask myself now, was anybody injured? You know, was anybody hurt? Did you? But nothing was broken or lost or stolen. No one's died. What's the deal? Is this going to happen in a minute? Is it going to matter in a day, a week, a month? Or are we going to get through this and it's just going to be, you know, let's just go with it?
Yeah,
it works. Yeah. It really does. I've found it's given me a real good leap in the last 5 years.
Well, Declan's been talking about sectioning on Radio Live this morning. He rang up and volunteered some information, which I was going to ask him about. So, Andrew, thank you very much for your contribution to Mental Health Radio. Take It From Us. We'd love to get some more tracks that we could play here of yours.
Oh, I'll send you through some. That's fantastic.
Absolutely. All the best with your journey.
Hey, thank you so much, and thanks for having me, and all the best with your radio show. Great thing you guys are doing there.
And for you, enjoy talking with you.
Yeah, thanks, AJ.
Okay, see ya.
Yes.
Right, so obviously this word sectioning in mental health has taken a very high profile, with politician Jamie Lee Ross being sectioned to the mental health unit at Middlemore Hospital. I played tennis with some people yesterday, and they were talking about they had forgotten the word being sectioned. I said, well, probably he'd been put under a compulsory treatment order, but this person was quite adamant that the word started with S. And Declan reminded me this morning that it is being sectioned. Declan, can you shed some light on what happens when you're sectioned?
Yeah. In my case, the police were called, arrested, handcuffed, taken into police cell.
The police weren't arrested, you were.
No, I was, unfortunately. Yeah, well, yeah. And, you know, the sectioning was there specifically for my protection and for the general public, safety of property and persons. And, you know, when I look back on it now, it was probably the best thing that did happen because it got me into the mental health system. And so you go through the whole processing in the police station, you get locked in a cell, and then I think I got brought out about three different times and sat in front of half a dozen mental health workers and, you know...
Professionals.
Yeah, professionals. And they're doing the psychiatric assessment and, you know, when they ask you questions, you know, do you think what happened today is normal? And one part of you wants to say yes and one part of you wants to say no. And so that whole... process. I think it is an extremely important part because there are times where you can't make those decisions for yourself. I had fiction and fantasy running over like tracing paper, one on top of the other, and I'm grateful that that happened because the things I did up to the point when the police were called, such as doing a right turn American style on a left turn lane and things like that and going sideways around a 35 recommended corner at 70 k's under skid control, you know, I could quite easily have done some real serious damage. And so...
To yourself,
you know,
and to others.
Absolutely.
But was it a frightening experience, though? I mean, if you're in the police station, you're being asked to leave a cell, to be interviewed by mental health professionals?
I think I'd got to the point where that psychosis had kicked in. Although I was aware of reality and what was fantasy, it was a frightening place because for me in that cell, you know, this was November the 28th, so it was the day of Erebus. It was a couple of months after the Twin Towers. And in my mind, the clanging of keys and doors being open and closed, to me, I was trapped in the bottom of one of those twin towers, and that was the fireman moving around, and I just kept thinking to myself, they're not going to come and get me, I'm here, I'm not getting out, this is the end, you know, and it's a real frightening place to be.
Right, but was there an element of safety as well, and that you were, you know...
Yeah, well, actually, I was basically sitting on the side of the bench going bang, bang, bang with my feet, open the doors and let us out, to the point where I had cracks on my heels and for 3 weeks basically had difficulty moving around. So, yeah, I mean, they come and check on you every so often, but, you know, yeah.
So once you were assessed, what happened then?
They put me back in that cell, and late that night I found out they took me up to North Shore, mitted me over the counter, screaming and yelling, basically, and completely naked. Yeah. Took 6 cops to carry me out horizontally, apparently.
Out of the police station?
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
And so how are we doing for time?
We're just about ready to bail because Joe's knocking on the door.
Joe's knocking on the door. Well, thank you for listening. We'll be back next week with an interview with a psychologist and the CEO from Anxiety New Zealand.
Awesome. We'll catch you next week. Go and get some sun, guys.